Welcome back to Trickle Down Socialism, where we discuss how the U.S. currently has a system of socialism for the super rich and corporations, where we try to defang the term socialism and explore how government, with just a slight tweak in priorities and a focus on social investment, could be a force for good in all of our lives.
Patrick.
What's going on, Dan?
Hey, other than devoting your life to a Zoom breakout room, what have you been up to?
Yeah, restarting school remotely has got to be one of the weirder things that's ever happened. Just trying to get to know a whole new bunch of eighth graders remotely is weird, to say the least. But you know what? They're showing up. I'm really impressed with attendance. So that gives me hope for the school year.
Speaking of attendance, I want to know, this is a serious question, if I Zoom bomb someone else's class, am I marked present?
I don't think that's how it works. So Carlos, we got to let you know that we've had some issues with the Boston Public School Zoom meetings. There have been some people coming in and trying to do some inappropriate things in other people's classes. So
such as?
Well, we don't want to get into specifics here. But
no, but we do, though.
Let's just say there's going to be a whistleblower at some point that's going to come out with it. And actually, isn't that the topic for today's episode?
That is the topic, and we'll get into that in a little bit. But first, we've got some pretty big news going on with the passing of RBG. And just
the notorious RBG.
Yeah, some people have called her that. But Ruth Bader Ginsburg passed away. I mean, we've known that she's been sick. She's been battling cancer on and off for quite a while. But this creates quite a crisis for Democrats. And, you know, we've got a situation now where it looks like Trump could potentially force through his third Supreme Court justice in his 4 years in office. Despite the fact that, Mitch McConnell held off with almost 300 days to go before the end of Obama's term, held off on appointing his pick, Merrick Garland, at the end of Obama's time in office. And Lindsey Graham told us to use his own words against him, but somehow he claims that Democrats' treatment of Kavanaugh was so unfair that he no longer wants us to use his words against him.
I mean, I don't, other than obviously the incredible loss of Justice Ginsburg, I don't see politically the huge sea change that's happening as a result of this. So remember that the persuadable voters, like your Midwestern blue-collar worker, they're going to be looking at the economy and possibly the coronavirus. If you are an evangelical conservative, like a one issue voter, you're not, you're already voting. Who is this new group of, like, Trump is trying to squeeze, like, more white people out of, like, I don't know, some basket of white people. there's no, who else is left that doesn't know what he stands for and is thinking.
He's squeezing blood out of a stone. He's expanding his base.
Yeah. I was trying to think of like a pastier version of blood out of a stone. Like a marshmallow out of a, birch tree or something. I don't know.
But your point is, Dan, that this does potentially give some more energy to the left, even though you can't really galvanize any
right.
More support.
Well, because we're both members of a union. The Janus decision is basically making it so people don't have to contribute to unions, that it's optional. And the southern conservative states, they're a lot of the ones that have lower union membership, but the places like Pennsylvania, Ohio, Michigan, Wisconsin that Democrats really need to win, those are the ones affected by the Janus case. Those are also the ones who are most likely to go without health care, right? So the first big decision that the new court is going to make, with or without this new justice, is on November 10th. They're listening to the Affordable Care Act case. So what's Trump, if I was Biden in next week's debate, I would hammer it. I would say, what are you going to do for the millions of Americans that are going to lose health care? By the way, I heard this today on the radio. COVID is now going to be a pre-existing condition, right? The stuff that happens to people's vascular systems and their, you know, their pulmonary systems and their heart after COVID, right? COVID is not like a one and done treatment. Now those people, all millions of Americans, have a pre-existing condition, and Trump and the Supreme Court are going to get rid of that. That's what I would right. hammer if I was like 77, sleepy, and from Delaware.
It well, just so happened to be running for president.
I mean, those are good points, Dan. I also think that potentially what this does is if Trump does in fact get a chance to appoint his third Supreme Court justice, you've now got a pretty solidly conservative court when at a time when I feel like the country is starting to shift to the left. Even if it's moderate Democrats in some places that are taking seats in Congress, you still, I feel like over the next decade or so, we're going to have a shift to the left. And so what that's going to do is you're going to have a lot of progressive legislation that gets passed. And all it's going to take is one governor somewhere or just a conservative lawyer in another state deciding to challenge a law, and it'll make its way to the Supreme Court. And when you've got a solidly conservative Supreme Court, they're going to block it or dismantle that progressive legislation. So it's going to create a situation that's quite frustrating, I think, for Americans, but especially for, you know, an electorate that I feel is starting to push to the left.
So, Patrick, is there anything blowing in the wind today, whistling past the graveyard that is American politics today?
Yeah, so we just mentioned the impeachment proceedings. That came about because of a whistleblower report. And I think we've heard a constant kind of drumbeat from whistleblowers who have reported on malfeasance, fraud, all kinds of bad actions from this administration. You know, we recently had the whistleblower report about ICE facilities and forced hysterectomies on detainees. Oh. Mm. We've had a number of, you know, really kind of shocking and chilling reports from whistleblowers throughout Trump's time in office. And so I sat down and talked to Nat Smith, who is a whistleblower protection lawyer in Minnesota, because I wanted to get a better understanding, and I wanted our listeners to get a better understanding of whistleblower laws, you know, basically what whistleblowers do, what constitutes a whistleblower, and what type of whistleblower protection exists on the state and the federal level. And Nat gave, you know, some really interesting things to think about in terms of why whistleblower laws exist in the first place, but then also like what whistleblower retaliation looks like, and then what's the recourse that people have against that type of retaliation. And, you know, what's really crazy is I thought I heard, you know, it seemed to be a lot of whistleblowers this time around. So I looked it up. From 2014 to 2018, more than 14,000 federal employees have filed whistleblower disclosures. So we hear about only a few of those, but it happens a lot. And it is basically a system of accountability. It's a way to call out fraud. It's a way to call out corruption. And it's a way to call out any kind of general bad actions. And it's set up so that the whistleblower should be protected. Now, Trump, you know, pretty early on in his presidency, even though he did support the passage of some pretty strong whistleblower protections, he has just ruthlessly attacked anybody who speaks out against him. So I want to read one tweet that really kind of shows how little he cares for whistleblower protection laws. Speaking about the whistleblower who, you know, Vindman, Lieutenant Colonel Vindman, whose report, you know, started the impeachment proceedings, Trump tweeted, "The whistleblower got it so wrong that he must come forward. The fake news media knows who he is, but being an arm of the Democratic Party, don't want to reveal him because there would be hell to pay. Reveal the whistleblower and end the impeachment hoax." So he's attacking the whistleblower via Twitter, which just goes against everything that whistleblower mm-hmm. laws say. And, you know, so I wanted to get an understanding. I think Nat gives us a really good understanding of what whistleblowers are, like what exactly constitutes a whistleblower, and then what type of protections exist against the retaliation.
Pat, that statement from Trump also reminds me, given that we both work in a middle school, of like when you walk up to a kid and you're like, hey, come here for a minute. And they're like, I had nothing to do with what happened in that bathroom.
Like, that's exactly right.
If why is he freaking out and screaming hoax and being like, we must find out who it is. Dude, you're innocent, right? Like, I mean, right. Isn't that like 101? You sit down in the police station or the principal's office or whatever. You don't say shit, or if you do, you lie, right? But you certainly don't give clues.
That's his MO, though. I mean, that's exactly how he's operating.
So I'm pretty confident that after listening to this interview with Nat Smith, you will have a much better understanding of whistleblowers, whistleblower laws and protections, and what retaliation against whistleblowers often looks like.
Awesome.
Let's blow that whistle.
Welcome to Trickle Down Socialism, Nat. It's great to have you on the show.
Thanks, Pat. It's good to be here with you tonight.
So I'd like to start out by giving our listeners just a general sense of what it is that you do. Could you tell us what type of law you practice and let us know, like give us a firm definition of what a whistleblower is?
Sure. I'm an attorney who represents whistleblowers across the country, predominantly under a statute called the False Claims Act, or FCA, which is a bipartisan statute originally enacted by Abraham Lincoln during the Civil War, and is championed today by Republican Senator Chuck Grassley. That statute generally provides protections and rewards for those who report fraud against the government. And that's essentially what a whistleblower is. It's someone who observes what they believe to be illegal conduct, and then reports it to their employer, to a government agency, whether it be state or federal, or reaches out to, you know, any other appropriate authority, you know, to report that illegal conduct and try to put a stop to it.
Okay, and just so that I'm clear and our listeners are clear, especially those who haven't heard much about whistleblowers, could you just really drill down and define what conduct it is? So you said fraud and misconduct, but what types of things? Could you give us some examples that are reported and fit that definition of whistleblowing?
Yeah, I mean, it's hard to narrow that down, Pat, to be honest. I mean, illegal conduct can vary from industry to industry. So you could be a whistleblower who is someone who reports, let's say, discrimination within your company, whether it be against discrimination against you as an employee or a coworker. It could be retaliation for blowing the whistle on an OSHA violation, unsafe working conditions. I work with a lot of individuals who are reporting some sort of fraudulent conduct that's going on, whether that be misbilling, bid rigging, manufacturing fraud in terms of swapping out parts for lesser components. But we see rampant fraud in the healthcare industry right now, particularly recently with the PPP loans that are going out. We're seeing a big uptick in that. But really, you know, it really is anyone who is reporting what they believe to be some sort of illegal conduct going on that they observe, and then they can report it. And it really varies from industry to industry.
Okay. And before we move on, you mentioned something that I think some of our listeners might not get just from the name, but bid rigging. What exactly is bid rigging, and where do you see that happening?
So bid rigging essentially is some sort of price manipulation or control where, you know, someone who's bidding on a government contract, generally in the defense or manufacturing space, and they're manipulating the pricing in order to get a better deal and kind of dupe the government into paying more money than they otherwise would.
Okay, thanks for that definition. So there are various state, local, and federal laws on the books that protect whistleblowers against retaliation. Could you give us an idea of what types of whistleblower retaliation you and your firm see most often, and how
how do companies try to punish people who call them out for acting immorally or breaking the law or any of those other behaviors you named before?
Yeah, so most often we see whistleblowers who are employees within a company, and they are seeing something illegal, like I mentioned, for example, fraudulent billing to Medicaid or Medicare, like a skilled nursing facility, perhaps. And when they raise their concerns to the company, they face some sort of adverse action or retaliation. Sometimes that is immediate termination or pretty quick termination after the report. But it can also be things like demotions, changes in duties or scope of work, unwarranted performance improvement plans or PIPs, or other sort of efforts by the employer to get the whistleblower to quit their job by just making conditions kind of intolerable.
And how much do those protections against retaliation vary from state to state, or is it pretty standard across the board?
It definitely varies from state to state. I practice predominantly in Minnesota. That's where our office is based out of. And so from the employment perspective, Minnesota has a lot of really favorable protections for employees. There are other states across the country that do not have those same protections for employees in place. And that changes state to state. But obviously, when you move into the federal level, you know, that is consistent across the board because you're, you know, every state would be subject to that thing. So something like the False Claims Act has whistleblower protections built into it, and that's going to be consistent across the country.
Okay. Could you give us an example of a whistleblower who faced retaliation and how your firm stepped in, and what was the result of your firm stepping in?
We were representing an employee who worked for a manufacturing company making batteries for Humvee gun turrets that were being used in the Middle East, predominantly in Iraq. So these were combat vehicles, and the battery was to operate. It was like a backup power source for these gun turrets. The principal component that they were looking at was this battery, and the government contracted for battery A, and what they ended up providing was battery B, which our client alleged was a substandard battery part and didn't conform to the contract that was negotiated. And so we worked with our client to report that to the Department of Justice and the U.S. Attorney's Office. And ultimately, our work, our collaboration with them resulted in an over $5 million being recovered and returned back to the U.S. Treasury. And during that process, you know, when our client first made his concerns known to his employer, they retaliated against him by terminating his employment. And so really with these False Claims Act cases, when someone blows the whistle, there's kind of two pieces going on at times. One, you have the fraudulent conduct that's going on, specifically in this case against the government. And then they have their individual employment retaliation claim as well. And each results in, potentially results in recoveries for these individuals. So under the False Claims Act, anyone who blows the whistle and is successful in bringing information to the government that results in a recovery is entitled from anywhere between 15 to 30% of the amount recovered. That's by statute. And separate from that, if there is a retaliation claim, the employee can be entitled to compensation under that as well. And those damages are unique to each individual, and it depends on the industry that they're in, their salary, their, you know, whatever they're earning, their 401ks, all the benefits. So it really depends on the unique situation. But one unique thing about the False Claims Act is that whistleblowers are entitled to double back pay damages, as well as special damages like front pay and other emotional distress and things, and costs and attorney's fees.
So you could make an argument that whistleblowing and these whistleblower protections are a way of making government run more efficiently. Is that right?
I would absolutely agree with that. Originally, it was enacted by Abraham Lincoln, like I mentioned earlier, during the Civil War, because there was just rampant fraud going on against the Union Army at the time. So contractors were providing the Union Army with cardboard shoes, representing that they were made out of leather, lame horses and mules, you know, representing that they were the strongest beasts around, sawdust instead of gunpowder, and a variety of other things.
And guns that didn't work, or guns that weren't anywhere what they were advertised as. I remember reading that. That's pretty funny.
Yeah. So just a variety of things that were going on. And so Congress got together and passed by Abraham Lincoln to incentivize people on the front lines. And that's where whistleblowers really come into play here, is because there's so much going on when it comes to the United States government. I mean, it is touching almost every industry imaginable. There's so much money involved that it is just impossible for the government to police every single thing. And that's where whistleblowers come in. When some entity is taking advantage of the situation that they're in to their benefit and to the detriment of the government or someone else, you know, whistleblowers are on the front lines, be able to observe that conduct, report it, and get it redressed. And that's why they're so important.
Okay. And so does every whistleblower face retaliation in your experience?
No, they don't. We actually represent a good portion of our clients that don't face any sort of retaliation. Sometimes they've left their employer voluntarily. Sometimes they continue to work there while the case is ongoing. The beauty of the False Claims Act is, and other whistleblower statutes, is they don't revolve just around retaliation. Someone can be a whistleblower. For instance, we represented an individual that was reporting false claims being submitted to Medicaid, Medicare, billing for free samples, upcoding office visits, you know, generally billing for unnecessary procedures, which is a huge piece of healthcare fraud right now. And there was no retaliation claim, but he was able to work successfully with the U.S. Attorney's Office in obtaining, you know, about $850,000 back to the Treasury. And because of the incentives provided under the False Claims Act, was able to take a percentage out of that. So whistleblowers are rewarded when they stick their neck out.
Right, because they're taking a chance, and providing that incentive makes it more likely that they're going to go ahead and take that chance.
Absolutely.
So one thing that I found really interesting in reading about your firm is that you represented a member of the Rochester, Minnesota Police Department, and she faced backlash because she posted on Facebook in support of Standing Rock protesters. And for any of our listeners who haven't heard of Standing Rock in a while, it was protests that were designed to stop the construction of a pipeline that was proposed to go right through a Native American reservation. So how did your firm step in this case, and what was the result?
Sure. We worked with an individual who was a former police officer from Rochester, who we got in contact with after she had been terminated. You know, not only did she report about her feelings and express support for Standing Rock protests, but she also reported internally suspected racial bias in assignments regarding a fellow officer. And I think particularly relevant in today's time, she also spoke out against police brutality and excessive force. Soon after those posts were made, she was terminated. And ultimately, we were able to work with her and provide enough evidence to support her claims and the temporal proximity between those events, and looked at other employees who had made similar posts out there expressing their views one way or another and hadn't faced that type of retaliation. And so we were able to reach a resolution in that case of just about $1 million.
And was she reinstated, or had she kind of decided that policing wasn't for her?
I think at that point she chose to move on.
Okay. So I understand that, you know, reporting procedures are probably pretty different for the types of whistleblowers that we've seen more recently reporting on the president's actions or actions of agencies that he oversees, like ICE most recently. But for instance, there isn't always an inspector general for the types of clients that you take on to handle whistleblower complaints. But do you think that there are proper protections in place for whistleblowers who bring to light misconduct by the president or by federal agencies? And what do you think would help make this process better?
So I think there's a lot to unpack there. Generally, I would say there are pretty robust protections for whistleblowers in the private sector. And there's obviously room for improvement always. But I think federal employees only recently have started to see some of those same protections come to light. In 2012, Congress enacted the Whistleblower Protection Enhancement Act that still hasn't gone quite far enough in terms of the protections needed. And a lot of what that was about was at the time, and still today, there are a lot of administrative hoops that federal employees need to work through before they can ever see their day in court, unlike a private sector employee who can file a lawsuit pretty much immediately. And part of that aspect is a deterrent, right? Because people have to go through these things. And although I would like to believe that the administrative processes are set up to seek justice and fairness and, redress improper conduct, it doesn't always work out that way. So not being able to get into the courtroom and really, advocate for yourself with the help of an attorney about whether or not you were wrongfully terminated or had some other retaliatory conduct taken against you for speaking out, I think is something that still needs to be improved upon so that you don't have to go through quite, exhaust all of those administrative remedies.
And do you think it would help the process if these various inspector generals were not working at the behest of the president? So basically, the president can fire those inspector generals whenever he wants, and the president appoints those inspector generals whenever he wants.
Yeah, I mean, I think there's definitely going to be some overlap. And again, it somewhat depends on the federal agency involved and who's doing that work. With that 2012 Act, the Merit System Protection Board kind of came into existence, and they're supposed to be looking at these cases. And I think pretty recently there was more than 2,500 cases in a backlog, and a lot of those were whistleblower cases. And so it's hard for those federal employees to kind of work through that system when, no one's really addressing their case to begin with. To your point about just direct executive oversight, I mean, yeah, I think that can certainly be a problem. I think there's a difficult situation that we're in right now, specifically with the Department of Justice, and how that, instead of being an independent body to redress fraud against the government as a whole, being used as a tool for the executive branch, pushing its agenda.
I think that's a great point. So how do you react and how do some of your colleagues react as professionals who represent whistleblowers for a living when you hear the president say things like, he said, I would love to talk to that whistleblower, or he says worse things in some cases where he questions the patriotism of a whistleblower or calls a whistleblower a coward? How does that strike you?
It doesn't sit well with me, Pat. Because the people that I work with are some of the most incredible individuals that have the utmost integrity and are many, many times just at the end of their rope. They've been doing everything they can to kind of fight the system, fight that injustice, whatever it may be, to try to put a stop to whatever that illegal conduct is, and just are not seeing any change. And as kind of that last Hail Mary pass, that last ditch effort, they're turning to these whistleblower statutes to try to effectuate some real change. I think that when, whether it be a Republican or Democratic president or anyone for that matter, stepping in and interfering in that process ultimately is to the disadvantage of the taxpayer. We're the people that are funding the government at the end of the day. It's our money. And if someone has the courage to come forward and point out that something that is wrong is going on, it at least warrants a true investigation and a thorough investigation. And then we need to be okay with the results of the investigation. Sometimes we believe something is going on, and maybe it is. Maybe it's not to the fullest extent that we thought it was going on. And I've seen that a lot in the recent years in terms of the reporting on these things. When an investigation comes out, maybe not perfectly as was alleged at the outset, that something was wrong. Well, that's the process. You know, we are encouraging people to come forward so that we can stop illegal conduct or malfeasance or abuse of power. And that's the point. You know, we want those things to be prevented. And discouraging people from stepping forward when things don't turn out to be perfect, I think is a real disservice to the American people.
And as you point out, it takes quite a bit of courage to go against the grain and, as you said, stick your neck out. So as opposed to being cowards, these people are actually quite brave in their circumstances. So I often hear arguments in the media about who is and who isn't a whistleblower, sometimes accompanied with an argument about whether or not they can consider themselves a journalist. But let's take one example, and I want to hear your analysis of whether or not this person is blowing the whistle or doing something else. So Edward Snowden. Now, Snowden copied and leaked classified information while working at the NSA, the National Security Agency. Would you consider him a whistleblower? And how do you make that distinction?
Yes, I would think that Snowden was a quote-unquote whistleblower. I would say that at the time, 2013, I believe, is when he was making his initial reports and contacts with the Washington Post. And at that time, in the intelligence community, there really was no mechanism or protections for whistleblowers to make any reports. So your choice at that time really was to either sit quietly and let things continue on as they were, or to go to the media. And Snowden obviously chose to go to the media. In 2014, the intelligence community actually got some of those protections in the Intelligence Reporting Act of 2014. And that provided some remedies to protect them from retaliation if they blew the whistle, and put in some processes by which to do so. So for Snowden, just at that time, there really wasn't any alternative for him but to go to the media to try to report those things to bring awareness to what was going on.
So your distinction there is that if there had been a separate mechanism in place and he bypassed that mechanism and went to the media, you'd say something's wrong there, but because that was really his only avenue, you know, to seek any type of redress, you say that's why you would consider him a whistleblower?
Yeah, that's a good question, Pat. And I'm not sure if I know the perfect answer for it, to be perfectly honest with you. I think when there are mechanisms in place for individuals, regardless of the industry, to come forward and you know, hopefully with some sort of confidentiality, be able to report and have allegations of wrongdoing properly investigated, they should be protected. But I think there's also always the opportunity for individuals to go to the media. I mean, I might have to think on that last question more, Pat, to be perfectly honest with you.
Sure. So lastly, I want you to kind of zoom out here and explain to our listeners why whistleblowers matter and why whistleblower protections matter. So what's at stake if we allow whistleblowers to be retaliated against by government agencies, to be belittled by, you know, government leaders, or, you know, if we allow any organizations to silence whistleblowers? What's at stake?
I think what's at stake is the continuation of significant harm. That harm can be physical and it can be financial. And I think both of those types of harm ultimately are impacting the American people and taxpayers as a whole. You know, whistleblowers, like I mentioned earlier, they're the people on the ground, in the trenches, you know, observing this thing firsthand. You know, there was a doctor in Florida who was misdiagnosing healthy individuals as if they had cancer, solely for the purpose of being able to bill that chemotherapy treatment to Medicaid, Medicare, other government beneficiaries. You know, that's an instance where, but for the whistleblower, I mean, not only was this guy ripping off the system, ripping off the government, taking, you know, our taxpayer dollars and putting them in his own pocket improperly, he was drastically changing people's lives in the most horrendous way imaginable. And that's why I think whistleblowers are so critical to stop bad conduct and bad people from really just taking full advantage of a system that's intended to do good. And it just creates, you know, unfortunately, it's such a huge population, and we do the best we can to police it. But like I mentioned, the government has its hands in so many things and is trying to do so much for this country. You know, it relies on in my mind, heroic individuals to come forward to try to redress that conduct and put an end to it for your benefit and my benefit.
Right. Well, I want to thank you, Nat, for not only taking the time to come on the show, but for really breaking down a lot of these concepts that I don't think are often really well spelled out or well explained in media. And, you know, I just really appreciate you taking the time to explain these things to me and to our listeners.
Yeah, it's my pleasure. Thanks for having me on.
Have something that like you came away with?
Well, he definitely knows his shit, you know, like every guest that you have on. He's obviously invested in what he does, right? To protect whistleblowers, and protecting whistleblowers as a sort of institution, right, as a back channel sort of checks and balances, like that's really important. And he, you know, fervently believes that what he's doing is the right thing. And I mean, it is the right thing objectively.
Yeah, I came away with his belief in the integrity of whistleblowers.
Right.
You know, his idea of like, you know, going against what someone like Trump would say, these whistleblowers are actually really brave and really honest people. And also his statement of like, this is their last gasp. This is their last attempt to set things right because they've tried every other avenue, right?
Did I hear him say that they get paid a cut of the proceeds? It's kind of like a criminal, what do you call it, a personal injury lawyer? Like, right? Isn't that how, like, if you fall down the stairs and you're dead broke and you sue someone for $1 million, a personal injury lawyer doesn't want $100,000 up front because you don't have $100,000.
Right.
Right. So what you get is, like, if you find out that someone's been cheating the government of $100 million, you're going to get, like, 5% of that.
Right.
Basically.
You got to stay, you're good, because business they has want, to stay alive. Your practice.
It's an incentive to, you know, to get people to come forward, and because the government is then cutting off that money that was not helping them out at all. And so they want to reward you for doing that.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So I think what I came away with most from Nat is just the understanding that whistleblowers really are a protection for democracy, and they are a way of making sure that government is running as efficiently as possible. And so without whistleblowers and without whistleblower protections, you know, we could really just have a system that's rampant with corruption and is just incredibly inefficient.
Yeah, it'd be an ugly world.
Especially when you have people who are running multinational corporations running a country as a multinational corporation.
Yep.
Yeah.
Or at least attempting to.
Hypothetically.
Right.
Kind of running a country.
Like say you were trying to drain a swamp, but you actually took baths in the swamp every night,
and you invited all your swampy alligator friends into the water with you. Yeah,
that's right. So Pat, what are we going to untap for next week?
So recently, in the most recent primary in Rhode Island, there was a sweep from the Working Families Party. They won 90% of the seats they ran for. And they're really starting to make moves in the state Congress and the state Senate. And so I wanted to see what's going on there and get a sense of what the Working Families Party stands for. I know they caucus with Democrats, but I want to get a sense of like what they're all about. And so I reached out and got an interview, which will happen next week, with one of the state senators who won from the Working Families Party.
Sweet.
Awesome.
So we look forward to seeing you, or we won't see you, but you tuning in again next week.
Remember to rate us and subscribe on wherever you get your podcast.
Subscribe, baby.
Wait, Los, where's Dito?
Dito? Who's that? Dito who? You know,
the producer, the guy who always tells us our levels are off.
Oh, man, that's right. Yeah, you know, Dito fell victim to the great... Power company, Eversource.
Again? He was out of power for like a week over the summer.
I know.
Oof.
Yeah. So apparently somebody smashed into a pole or something down the street, so lights out, baby.
Well, that's... That's what they say. They just can't manage their power.
Yeah, basically.
I think he's cheating on us with another podcast.
Trickle
you
up,
know what I mean? Because he's been working really late recently, staying at a lot of hotels. I mean, I don't want to put him his business out there right now, but.
Okay, that's solid.
I've been tracking him on his iPhone.
let's not even give him any clues. Let's just send him this file and see if he can piece together how it should go.